The following program contains violence and coarse language.
And now we're pleased to bring you our feature presentation.
Yes, it's time once again for Radio Free X-Man.
What's Radio Free X-Man?
We've got 11,000 people at NASA trying to figure that out right now.
Radio Free X-Man's beloved cast of broadcast entertainers are back.
You all know people like this. You may be people like this.
Now, the charming and delightful president of X-Man Mortgage and host of Radio Free X-Man, Bob.
Your head is freakishly large.
Brooks.
And by coarse language, of course, he means 30. Water hazard.
Dog leg.
Long ball. Dog. Hey. Don't be looking at me that way. You're listening to Radio Free X-Man, the vastest, most popular talk show in this office.
On Sunday afternoon at 3.
On Sunday afternoon at 3. We rule that spot.
That's
on 1070
right.
AM. We are Radio Free X-Man, radiofreexman.com. You can always visit us and generally make fun of us like everyone else does. We feature knowledge about the mortgage industry,
mm-hmm.
knowledge about taxation and taxes,
yep.
because we have what you might call a knowledge base about tax, taxation, mortgage, finance, and finance-related things.
And a lovely knowledge base she is.
Indeed, indeed. We will also pepper you with various internet minutiae and trivia and stuff that you'll find just generally fascinating for about 20 seconds before you move on to whatever thought you were looking at the TV with.
Let's get back to the lovely knowledge base sitting next to you, because I don't think she's been properly introduced.
Of course not.
To my left, and that's the only time you'll find her on my left, is the tax goddess. Take a bow, tax goddess. Much further to my left would never to my left at all, would be Brewing Frog. However,
he's so far to the left, he's in Rockport.
That's right, he's so far to the left, he's in Rockport. Let me make sure I'm facing towards the summit here.
I'll have to power up the transmitter a little to get him to be able to hear this.
Probably well past the illegal stage.
We switch the frequency from the tower over to the one in the beacon. We pump up the wattage.
Not today, we don't pump up the wattage.
Wolfman Jack. Digging the seed with my record machine. I'm so right tonight I almost can't handle myself.
Just bang a couple of beer cans together, and he'll be right there. He telepathic. Rented lips. He communicates telepathically that way.
But he's going to be with us on the phone, communicating telephonically a new recipe, I understand.
Yeah, you know, he's very cooking-related, and as his name would imply, brewing-related, too. He brews his own beer.
He told me that great recipe for chili where you take a six-pack of beer and pork and beef, and you fry up the pork and beef and pour one beer in there, and then drink the other five.
Now, if you want an excellent chili recipe, the tax goddess has got you covered.
Well, all right. I mean, we're going to have time for that because we're never talking about anything in particular on this show.
This is a mortgage program, and while we're on the subject of mortgage, here's what makes it different. Here's what sets it apart.
He's taking my thunder.
I am.
He's a very bad man.
I'm going to allude to this. I'm going to let you in on a secret about it, and that is it uses cinnamon and chocolate.
Which go very well together. In fact, I had some Belgian dark chocolate not long ago that had a hint of cinnamon in it, and it was outstanding.
Yeah, but don't freak out, because it's not like it's chocolate chili or cinnamon chili or anything like that. All that does is it cuts down the acidity, and it makes for a very smooth chili.
Well, why am I even going to bother with the recipe now?
No, there's got to be more to it than that. Come on.
Well, we'll post that on RadioFreeXman.com.
All he did was allude to the recipe before eluding the blows that you were throwing at him.
That's right.
Allude.
I've assumed crash position.
Honey, sweetheart. Let's call the Brewing Frog and toss him on the air live here. Brewing Frog hotline ringing now.
Hello.
Rob, they just drop you in a boiling pot, don't they?
Yeah, or I'll make all sorts of riveting noises, right?
And speaking of boiling pots, while we're on the subject of mortgage, we called you today to discuss fish and fish preparation. Specifically, I'm on a diet now, Robbie. Yeah,
diet.
X-Man is on a diet.
And he's on the seafood diet.
That's exactly right. And now that we have dispatched with that old joke for the last time ever.
Wait. Okay, now we've dispatched with the joke.
What fish are you looking at preparing?
Brewing Frog, I want a light, kind of not-so-fishy fish, and I want it prepared in a very fat-free manner, yet still flavorful, with a nice bouquet.
Well, I cooked some chicken the other night. I took some bacon and cut it up into very small pieces and rendered it down.
Yep.
And then I pulled off that nice crispy bacon. cut the breast down the middle. Stuff the bacon in it. Stuffed in some Swiss cheese. Breaded, and then fried the chicken in the bacon grease.
Brewing Frog, the scream I hear is my diet saying, no!
It's either the stereo scream, that's your taste buds going, yes!
Yeah, baby, yeah!
You can look at me and tell that my taste buds have been saying yes all my life.
But I got to tell you, low-cal something, all you really need to do is bake your fish.
Baked fish, okay.
Yes, if you bake your fish. Now, also, you're
I did that, but I couldn't pull the can out of the oven. Because I was having baked tuna, right?
Go down and get you a run down to your local Bed Bath & Beyond. Thank you very much for that free plug. And you pick up a jelly roll pan, and you get a little rack that'll fit up on top of it. Season your fish and stick it in the oven.
Okay.
You can, take whatever, fish you find good. Tilapia, there's snapper you get down here quite a bit.
I've never noticed this. Can you buy snapper at the supermarket?
It depends on what they're getting in fresh. A lot of the local HEB stores have a pretty good fish counter.
Randall's does pretty good, too.
I guess they count fish for inventory, but why would you need a good fish counter?
Now, I'm looking at a canal right now. There's one mullet, two mullets.
Yeah, we got two mullets in this room here, I'm telling you that.
And one on the phone.
Why can't I find a mullet with a checkbook? Hey, you, mullet, give me your check. Anyway.
Moose, Rocco, help the man with his checkbook.
Really, if you want a good fish counter, or a fish counter in terms of, okay, this area of the store always has a very good selection, the fish are always fresh, and it's going to vary by, depends on who the manager at that particular store is. And,
really?
And like anything, if you go to some place and they always seem to have good fish, the fish are always in good shape.
Because they've been doing a lot of fish ups.
They'll clean them for you, scale them for you if necessary, do all the work that is necessary, and you always have a good experience. Hey, go shop there often. And some places won't even bother to do that. And the fish they have smell, fishy, which is not a good thing. You want a fish that doesn't really smell like anything.
Well, if it has a fishy aroma, then it would be smelt, right? Ah, thank you.
Thank you very much.
But seriously, folks,
like salt, you fool.
You can put fish fillets in a dish full of milk for a couple hours, and that'll take away 99% of that smell, won't it?
And then you can leave that milk for a really great practical joke.
Want some cookies with that, dear?
Why do these cornflakes taste like fish?
Why did these cornflakes jump out of my bowl and run away?
It's more like they just flopped around the table and looked confused, yeah.
Well, now, Brewing Frog, I'm surprised that you didn't bring up the obvious thing to think, which is maybe just a very light olive oil and then garlic.
Well, yeah. Well, I was going just before I was so rudely interrupted with the smelt joke. Oh, my God. We're going to work with something like that, a light oil, if you're looking at a diet. And what you want to apply your oil with is a little brush.
Right.
Think of it like a paintbrush, like you'd baste
mascara paste brush.
Off of your, yeah. Yeah.
And I you borrowed can actually, one from more, Tax Goddess.
To get more flavor, you can take various herbs and infuse your oil with the herbs, and then just paint the stuff on there and put more herbs on it, or some type of dry ground herb.
All right.
That will not only add a lot of flavor, it'll pull some of that oil out.
So I'm going to do snapper, I'm going to do like a suspension of garlic and olive oil. And what's spice should I put in there, sir? Herb.
Well,
my apologies,
I tell you what,
herb.
You put little thin slices of lemon on top of that, and that will give you a nice balance.
Oh, yeah.
But don't add lemon juice to it until after you get it out of the oven, because if you put the lemon juice on there before you stick it in the oven, it will make the juice bitter.
And it will resent you, and it won't go to college, and it'll never get a job.
But at least you don't have to send it money.
It'll act like those ingrates in Lebanon. But I wanted a big cruise ship to get out of the war zone.
And on the subject of mortgage, what did you think about that? What do we call that? It's not an expungement.
It's called a war.
Well, yeah. As in,
yeah, it's like, what did you think when you bought tickets to go to a country controlled by, terrorists? Come on, you idiot. Yeah. It's like, hey, I've had a real cheap place to vacation this year. Lebanon! I can't get my head around that one. It's like a terrible episode of The Honeymooners.
Well, there's a lot of American immigrants from Lebanon, specifically over the last 30 years since the Islamo-fascists have gone nuts there and started the civil war and driven out a lot of Christian families and that sort of thing. So there are a lot of people who have distant family members still there and go back to visit. It's not so much like a vacation. It's more like keeping up with the folks back home. But boy, did those terrorists make it harder.
Yeah, but what I found interesting is to the tune of 25,000. That's a lot of folks.
That's right. And Nancy Pelosi upbraided President Bush for charging these people the cost of airfare to get them out And then we find out 3 years earlier, Nancy Pelosi had voted for the law that requires people to pay that airfare back to the government.
Typical hypocrite.
I had not
liberal.
Heard that one. How delicious.
Yeah, and hardly anyone's calling her on the carpet for it.
That's why we're here, you see. That's why we have such an amazing listenership.
They're amazing, all right.
Yeah, I'd like to thank you, sir, and you, ma'am.
I guess if you're Hezbollah, or as I like to call them, Hezzy, you know, you got problems when even the Arab League is saying you guys are out of line and you're a bunch of screaming squirrels. Stop
well, here's
it.
The thing. The Arabs are more afraid of Iran than they are of Israel. And when they see Hezbollah acting militarily like that, they think Iran is trying to expand its Shiite Persian non-Arab empire. And they kind of get their knees knocking together and start speaking in tacit support of Israel.
Right. I mean, the quiet fact that everyone must acknowledge is that Persians are not Arabs and Arabs are not Persians. When all of Araby sees that Iran is exercising a lot of power like that and trying to become, in fact, the seat of Islam, well, that's a little scary.
Well, here's two facts for you. One, that Iran has been very content to, you know, fight wars via proxies. And thus, you know, not have, you know, operational control of things.
Yeah, they learned that trick from the Soviets.
Have a little fig leaf to hide behind. Yeah, they had some pretty good teachers on that. But here's the second fact. You'd think that, you know, proxies, they're not going to give them, you know, their neatest and newest toys and things to go boom. Well, that's not the case. Just recently, they gave Hezbollah not only a lovely Iranian-made C-802 anti-ship missile,
Silkworm.
Yes, which they shot at an Israeli missile cruiser. Which bonked off the side of the ship and blew up in the water. Good job, guys. Nice Iranian work.
Made in China.
They also gave them a Zalzal missile, which is a medium-range heavy missile, which is generally designed to carry chemical munitions. The Israelis spotted it being trucked into position and blew it up before they could fire the thing.
That's right. They played laser tag with it.
Yeah, Kerr Bluey. But here's
the point. Tag your hit.
They're giving Hezbollah their nicest toys to blow things up with. Now, we're trying to, you know, make nice and get them to stop doing nuclear research. And, hey, guess what? They're going to be giving bombs to Looney Tunes like this.
Well, Michael Rubin, the analyst, had put it this way, and I think that this is a pretty accurate picture. Once we backtracked on our firm position and started offering Iran carrots like benign nuclear electricity plants, Iran and every other Arab country made the assumption that we were getting weak. And when that happened, Iran decided they could activate Hezbollah and that we wouldn't do anything about it. But the Arabs were terrified of the idea that we were weak because that meant Iran was the strong horse. And they're genuinely afraid of Iranian expansion. So rather than coming all in to support Hezbollah, the Arab countries held back and stayed away and spoke in tacit support of Israel. And now Hezbollah, and by extension Syria and Iran, are hanging out there on their own. And it doesn't look good.
Couldn't happen to a nicer group of guys.
This is the present moment. Now, what's going to happen in a week? What's going to happen in 2 weeks? Now, I had seen not long ago that the Israelis had thrown down a 72-hour threat, I guess, for lack of a better term, to Syria to stop its support of Hezbollah and stop its resupply of their fighters in southern Lebanon.
That's when it gets interesting, Robbie, when Syria and Israel come to a little bit more of a head, shall we say.
The Syrian record against the Israelis is not a good one. In fact, I think the word is that they completely beat the snot out of them the last time they had a fight.
Yeah, they've been blanked.
Yeah, and I think what was the Syrian record against Israeli jets was, what was it, 82 jets for the Israelis and none for the Syrians. So they're not, you know, I imagine they're none too happy about going up and getting in a furball with them again.
Isn't it interesting because most of the countries around Israel have not a hope of a conventional war outcome going well for them. So what they're doing is they're stepping up the non-conventional, the unconventional war, Hezbollah and stuff like that. And Israel, I guess, just says, well, look, we're going to deal with that, too. And they're dealing with it pretty effectively, although they are catching a lot of Katyusha rockets lately.
I'm amazed at the fact that, you know, the world press and the usual suspects are looking at this in such a, you know, blasé manner. Those particular rockets were initially designed by the Soviets to be essentially an anti-infantry barrage missile that they would launch hundreds of them at a time, but what they suspected were gatherings of infantry and whatnot else. They're essentially anti-personnel weapons. They're designed to just slaughter people by the hundreds.
Right.
and they're using these things against civilian populations.
Brewing Frog, I heard the term reprisals used in the mainstream media today to discuss what Israel was doing. Is Israel, in fact, doing any reprisals? Are they targeting citizens? I don't think that they're doing that. Isn't that what a reprisal is?
Well,
if you do it, I'll do it too. If you firebomb my city, London, I'll firebomb Dresden, like in World War II.
To put them in the position of saying, look what you made me do.
Right.
I would think that it's more along the lines of, okay, they have gone over and killed, you know, many people. They're going to kill a lot more unless you go and make them stop. And the only way to make them stop is to blow up their toys and kill them.
But it's so totally morally unequivalent. I mean, I heard this week that the Hezbollah gunners were setting up roadblocks outside the villages in southern Lebanon to prevent villagers from leaving because they need them as human shields.
Well, hey, get ready for this one. As soon as the Israelis start moving in, they're just going to machine gun those people dead.
No doubt.
And I will also bet you a dollar that they're going to have, you know, handy video crews from, you know, your friends at either CNN or Al Jazeera. I'm not quite sure which is worse.
And the gunners will be wearing Israeli uniforms.
Oh, well, I wouldn't even know about that. They'll just film the dead bodies and you know, look at what the Israelis did and then produce a couple of handy eyewitnesses to the entire slaughter who will tell you a lurid tale that's probably going to get, you know, like any fish story, get bigger with each telling. And the media will breathlessly and unquestionably report it as fact.
Well, I don't think that stuff works quite as well as it used to.
Not
thanks,
the blogosphere.
Thanks in no small part to radio shows like this one, bravely
Absolutely.
Forging new territory.
Where we talk about nothing but mortgage.
That's right. And on the subject of mortgage.
Cook me a fish, Robbie.
Luckily, I've packed in some explosives, and I can see the bait fish out there right now. There's actually quite a few mullet down here right now.
That's the flash cooking method.
Yeah, but we're not talking about haircuts. You are in Rockport after all.
It's very nice. We were able to get down here in a short order, so it's kind of a nice deal. I like the place.
Good for you.
And Bob is doing a lot better, so I am very happy. I was worried sick about the guy.
Bob is the brewing uncle, right?
Dad's youngest brother.
Well, I bet he was glad to see you.
Yeah, it is. Glad to see a lot of us, really. It was like lots of smiles and laughs, so good thing.
Cook them all a fish and have a great time and come back and see us.
Will do.
All right, then, Robbie, tax goddess, you got something hanging off your lower lip.
Is my spit okay? Because I know you don't like the...
Your spit's just fine, dear. And while we're on the subject of mortgage...
Say, getting back to the program...
Oh, dear.
And while we're on the subject of mortgage, we have the tax goddess, our knowledge base of taxation, in the studio with us.
And a shapely base she is.
And a shapely
this
base.
This is why I like Big Dave.
Is she a shapely base or a basted shape?
She can hold up a lamp in my living room anytime. Tax goddess, we're talking about whether we should buy things personally or corporately.
Or LLC-ally.
Yeah, LLC is just
I like that word.
Smaller personal version of a corporation whose purpose is to limit liability, hence LL before the C.
Is that right? What's
hang on a second. Somebody's calling me on the phone. This is ridiculous.
That's like really professional
Hello?
There, man.
I'm great. We're doing the Radio Free X-Men program right now. Oh, okay.
Can you hear me now?
Believe it or not, he's on the phone with somebody else, and we're transferring and relaying questions and answers. 1 o'clock Friday it is. I'll write you down.
One of nature's great daisy chains.
Wasn't I the one that said to turn off all the cell phones before we started the program?
That's why we're laughing at you.
How embarrassing. Where were we?
LLC. LLC, which he likened to a corporation, and in fact their aim is the same, but they're really not quite the same thing,
no,
are they?
That's a very common misconception. People think it's a limited liability.
Did you hear that, David? You are misconceived.
I'll tell my mother right away. In fact, she'll probably call next.
Because let's face it, it's only our moms who are listening to this show. A lot of people think of it as being a limited liability corporation, but it's not. It's a limited liability company, and it is a distinct type of entity from a corporation. There are different tax rules that apply to a limited liability company than that apply to corporations, and you can end up with very, very different situations.
Bringing this back to the subject of mortgage, say I want to purchase a rental home, and I'm going to go to X-Man Mortgage and get the mortgage for it, blah, blah, blah.
With alacrity and a low rate.
With alacrity and a low... Say that again?
Because they answer their darn phones.
Because we answer our darn phones and...
So call the darn phone today.
That's right. We're alack.
I-X-M-A-N.
I-X-M-A-N.
With alacrity.
Alacrity, that means speed, you doofus.
I know, I'm just so fascinated.
That was after Dave looked it up in his dictionary.
She just threw that word at me and it hit me like a low-flying airplane.
It hit him and stuck and slid slowly down.
This horrible scream!
Brain Frog calls that the disintegrating orbit joke.
That's funny even without telling the joke.
That's right. It just has to burn through your brain's atmosphere and finally hits 5 minutes later. Where were we? We're
rental house. Mortgage.
That's right. I want to buy a rental house. I want
ADD.
I want X-Man to do the mortgage, and I want to go get me a rental house.
Well, I would say, first of all, yes, it's important to put it into some kind of a liability-limiting entity because... Okay. We're a lawsuit-crazy nation. If you do it right, it really does protect you.
So they won't
you.
Pierce the corporate veil, as they call well, it, the, if you set it
if
up
if it's
right.
A corporation or if it's a limited liability company. Ultimately, what it means is that in the event of a lawsuit, assuming you've properly created your entities, then you can lose the assets owned by the entity, in your example, the rental house.
Yeah.
But they cannot go after your personal assets. Now, in Texas, we have probably the most... advantageous bankruptcy laws from the perspective of the person who's declaring bankruptcy than anywhere else in the country. And we have much more beneficial laws than the federal government allows. Because when you declare bankruptcy, you can choose to follow federal law or the law of the state you reside in.
So
and in Texas, you always go for Texas law.
It wouldn't be out of bounds to speculate that a whole heck of a lot more small businesses start up in Texas than in a lot of those other states. Because it's a friendly place to... take a chance on a business without risking losing
right, and
your
our taxes,
personal assets.
We don't have a personal income tax. The franchise tax, of course, is now changed to the gross proceeds tax, but that's for another show.
Yeah, thanks, Governor Perry. We'll talk about you next week.
But you do want to put it in some kind of a liability limiting entity because you don't know when someone's going to fall down a staircase and sue you for far more than your insurance coverage is.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of rental houses, I would probably go with a limited liability company. One of the neat things about a limited liability company is if it has a single owner, it can be called what's referred to as a disregarded entity. A disregarded entity means it doesn't have to file a separate income tax return for federal tax purposes. So if I held the rental house in a corporation, I have to file a corporate tax return and I have to file a personal tax return. If I held it in a partnership with someone else, I'd have to file a partnership tax return and a personal tax return.
Mm-hmm.
But if I hold it in an LLC and I'm the sole owner, then I just report all that information directly on my personal return, and I have no requirement to file anything with the federal government.
So you and your business can be the same person for tax purposes, but be separate for litigation purposes.
Right, and that's a very big deal.
Big distinction.
Now, the biggest
I know all about being a disregarded entity.
I was going to say, that's a husband in the 12th year of marriage. Or is it just me?
As I was saying, gentlemen, the one mistake that I see very, very commonly made, well, people go and they want to set up their own entities instead of going to an attorney, which I think is always a mistake. When you're talking about something that potentially can protect you from tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars of liability, shell out the $1,500 and get a professional to do
go
it.
Go see Dave Brewer, the honest lawyer.
Anyway,
featured on our website, by the way.
He is good, isn't he?
Yeah, he's good. Yeah.
But the biggest mistake people make is... they make both themselves and their spouse members of the LLC.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's a community property state, so ultimately, in the event of a dissolution of the marriage or something like that, it doesn't matter whose name is on the membership because it's community property. You each own 50%.
That's right. If I own a gold mine and she divorces me, what's mine is hers, right?
Ba-dum-bum. But what happens is when you make both people a member, you don't have a single... owner entity any longer.
That's right.
You've created a partnership. And while it can be filed as an LLC, you have those federal filing requirements once again.
All that goes to show is that more and more you do need the tax goddess.
Absolutely.
And you can have the tax goddess. The tax goddess is haveable. All you got to do is go to
radiofreexman.com. I don't think I like the way he phrased that.
You can visit her on radiofreexman.com or at her website at yourbeancounter.net.
That's right. She's virtually haveable, folks. It's an
virtually
online
haveable.
Thing.
That's
you can
right.
learn more about her and you can tell her more about you. And then after you've learned about each other, you can decide whether you want to to have her, and she wants to have you.
Okay, gentlemen, I think that we've had enough of this part of the conversation.
All right, just
come on,
sure
we're
this...
trying to get you some customers. What's your problem?
That's right.
The kind of customers you appear to try to be getting me.
Are you impugning the nature of the listeners of this show?
No, I'm impugning the nature of the gentleman on the microphone.
She's talking to you, Bob.
Well, another week comes to a close, and it looks like you have, again, successfully frittered away 30 minutes of your valuable time.
How do they do that, those listeners? I don't see how either one of them has the time in their busy week to spare.
It's three. My mother's listening, too.
Thank you. Hi, Mom. We've gone through an entire program without involving the demigoddess Lexi in the program, but we couldn't get all the way to the ending without saying, hi, how are you?
Well, they woke me up at 10 in the morning, and they told me they give me food.
Well, that makes it an unusual day for her. See, we bait her with promises of college, too.
But first, she must have her golf lesson this afternoon.
Yes, with John Ankenbrand.
Because we're going for we're golf scholarship. Repeat it after me. Golf scholarship.
Hopefully LPGA.
I can actually hit the ball.
Oh, you can hit the ball. You win trophies already. What are you talking about?
Little medals.
Little tiny medals.
You know what?
It's a little tiny
person.
Excuse
me, you could only hit it like a yard.
That's why I don't play golf.
what she does is she screams at people to get them to hit it.
Is that a technique Mr. Ankenbrand has picked up, screaming at his pupils on the driving
range? No, his wife perfected it, I'm sure.
I hope she's not listening. Well, what are the odds? Let's face it.
What are the odds? I mean, four listeners? Come on.
We're going to release two of them. This afternoon.
The handcuffs come off. That's all the time we have. In spite of the best advice of broadcast professionals and the people who love and care about us, we're going to come back next week and do this program all over again. Same X time, same X channel.